Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. So keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left. I'm speaking today with Simon Smith. Simon is the editor of Better Humans magazine on the web. Welcome, Simon.
Hey, James.
Simon's my editor and one of my muses and inspirations, so I have long wanted to pick your brain on the air, and thank you for all the encouragement that you've given to my writing over the last two.
Well, thank you for writing for us.
Oh, it's my great pleasure. So I want to talk to you a little bit about how you came to be the manager of the most successful transhumanist meme-spreading machine that's ever seen the light of day. And you started as a dot-com refugee, is that right?
This is true. I started actually, I was working at an internet startup company in Toronto, where I was actually, I was an editor there as well, and I was editing health-related content. And then what happened was, I went through the whole dot-com boom and bust. I rode the roller coaster. And we really did call it a roller coaster then, too. So I figure that's one of the things I can tell, you know, my children and grandchildren about, is I actually went through that. And what happened was, while I was working at the company, my background was in journalism, and then this was my first real experience in online journalism. And I got to learn a lot about the technology and also about, you know, how you can actually build an editorial website and what people are looking for and what sort of works and what doesn't work. Anyway, I did that for about 2 years, and then at the end of that, the company was actually, we were making decent revenue, but it wasn't enough for the venture capitalists who had invested in the company. So at the end of about 2 years, they pulled the plug, and I was left with a bit of severance and time and interest in transhumanist issues and sort of science and technology at the cutting edge and what it would mean.
So you had been sitting in the midst of the streams of information flows out of health research and the innovations that were happening in biomedicine, and that got you interested in what's going to happen in the near future.
It was a bit different in that the site was actually an alternative health site, so it was dealing a lot more with alternative medicine. Which had become a big issue or a big thing at that time, and a lot of people were going after that market on the internet, partly because it's a lot less regulated than the Western allopathic medicine. So there was a lot of opportunity to sell nutraceuticals, and you know, people were trying to stake out that territory. So I was actually really dealing with a lot more of that aspect, although my personal interest leaned a lot more towards the biotechnology. I had started Better Humans as a hobby in about, I think it was March of 2001, when I had actually started, you know, just talking about the idea. And I really came to it after sort of discovering transhumanism on the internet and all the issues that transhumanism dealt with, and the positions and philosophies. Just really sort of, it all struck me as making a lot of sense. And I think I was in a personal philosophical crisis at the time, just trying to really decide, try to find some meaning in the world. And I had sort of experimented with humanism and found that that really didn't cut it for me. And so it was after, you know, having that crisis, and I discovered these ideas and maybe a way to steer the future, and started Better Humans as a hobby, and then it gained a lot of interest. I'd never actually thought that it would ever become a business, because I was not then, and I, to a certain extent, I don't think I am now such a businessman. I think, you know, as a lot of people are, I think, you know, you get really passionate about an idea, and then somehow your passion carries you through when perhaps, in other cases, an idea might have failed. And then your passion keeps you going. So, yeah, it was a hobby that became a business.
Well, you've been a very successful entrepreneur, I have to say. I mean, I don't know the backroom details of how much financing you're bringing in, but you seem to have gathered a stable of writers, and you have your daily news feed. I mean, is the news feed your principal source of what you're looking for revenue, is selling that?
The interesting thing is it's... we came at it initially, like I said, probably if we had designed this as a business first and foremost, as opposed to if we were driven more by business ideals than passion, things probably would have been designed a little bit differently from the get-go. For one of the things I think about specifically is that, you know, we could get a lot, we could do a lot of things differently that might lead us to making more money with less outlay, with less overhead, if we just wanted to be, you know, if we didn't want to tackle some of the issues that we tackle, and if we didn't want to be what we are. And I think, so we've really then had to decide, well, okay, if we want to be this, if we want to be this organization that really is very much staking out the opposite side from the bioconservative camp and, you know, trying to put forward alternative ideas that sometimes are politically incorrect, how are we going to actually support ourselves? And as everybody knows, the internet advertising at this point, you know, or at least until very recently, you couldn't really make money from internet advertising unless you were one of these huge, huge companies like Yahoo or, you know, one of those companies, unless you also really wanted to annoy your users with intrusive pop-ups or things like that. So it's not easy it's not easy to be us. But so what we did find is that there is a real interest in the material that we're covering because it is, I guess for lack of a better word, cutting edge. And so we seem to be exploring things or having access to ideas that other information organizations, editorial organizations, aren't really touching.
I'm speaking with Simon Smith. He's the editor of Better Humans magazine. This is Dr. J, and this is Change Surfer Radio that you're listening to. Simon, you have thought a great deal about the demographics of the transhumanist movement and as well the demographics, I'm sure, of who the Better Humans readership is. Mm-hmm. Who do you see those people as being?
Well, I guess there's the reality of who those people are and then sort of who we want those people to be. And the reality is at this point that we are attracting very much a highly educated, highly technical, highly professional, highly male audience between the age of 18 and 45. And in fact, the majority of our readers are actually from the state of California, which isn't really surprising. Now, we are based in Toronto, of course, which also we don't really focus on a particular audience from a particular country. We just seem to have attracted largely international audience, but mainly from the U.S. That was a bit rambling, and I apologize. So the audience we'd like to attract, though, is far more diverse. And really, we're seeing that happen now because there's so much interest in these emerging biotechnologies and things like stem cell technology and gene therapy. And there don't seem to be as many, I mean, we seem to be a place where people are coming to for that information. Some of the top keywords that people search for on the site are stem cells and cloning. And I think part of what's happening is that the world at large is catching up to these transhumanist issues, whereas before, you know, gene therapy and stem cell technology and artificial intelligence and nanotechnology, all these things were really confined to the world first of science fiction and then sort of to the world of transhumanism and cutting-edge science. And now it seems that a lot of this stuff is making is on everybody's mind. I mean, it's obviously the cloning situation with the Raelians was a very big example of that. And I think so we're starting to attract a much more diverse audience, and we're really hoping that we can increase that so that we're, I guess, an alternative source of information about these issues and topics. I don't know if I really answered your question or if I sort of did a bit of a circle there.
No, that's very good, actually. Well, what do you think your relationship is to the transhumanist movement? I know that you've been adamant about being independent, but it's, you know, you said that this grew out of a passion for transhumanism, mm-hmm. but you know, movement publications have a very different marketability than publications which serve the more general interests that you were just talking about. I mean, Discover magazine kind of serves those general
right.
interests.
I guess that's a good question, and I think that's one of the balances we try to find. I mean, one of the things we consider ourselves is not really a magazine. One of the things we're trying to get more into being and is an editorial production company, and that gives us a little bit more leeway to stake out slightly different territory where we can do more than just, you know, be a webzine at betterhumans.com, but now we can, because of our position and the processes and expertise that we're sort of developing, we can go to other people and say, you know, hey, we can develop that editorial for you, or, you know, hey, you guys want to do a show on cyborgs? Well, why don't you come to us? We've got the connections, we've got the research, we can do this for you.
The Toronto Science Center recently tapped you for some stuff.
Yeah, the Ontario Science Center. We've been talking with them. They're interested in us, but to date, that's about as far as it's gone. It's just a general interest in what we're doing. Because they also see that there are a lot of controversial or kind of, you know, these issues now that people are interested in. People are really interested in what's happening with cloning, and so they are looking to try to provide that information, as are a lot of other organizations out there. So we're hoping that by doing that, we can say, like, hey, you know, we are out here exploring this stuff on a day-to-day basis, and we've got the information and the contacts and the expertise. Why don't you give us a shot? So now the relationship with transhumanism, we are definitely distinct, and I think partly what it is we can... I think transhumanism is definitely a label, and it's an important label, and I do consider myself a transhumanist. At the same time, I think a lot of people are transhumanists and don't call themselves transhumanists. I think, you know, and if people have talked to me about this before and told me their positions on even health. And if you ask most people, they will say, well, yeah, you know, I want to be as healthy as I can possibly be. Or I can, you know, I go into, I remember one of my chiropractors had something on his wall from the World Health Organization, which talks about health as not only a state of not having disease, but actually a state of optimal wellness. So health does not just mean that you don't feel sick, it also means that, you know, you're actually feeling vibrant and exuberant or whatever else you'd like to say about it. So I think these ideas about transhumanism are out there, and that maybe people... are, while they wouldn't necessarily call themselves transhumanists, they could hold, you know, many of the ideas that transhumanists would hold. And I think that by not explicitly calling ourselves a transhumanist company or a transhumanist publication, we can appeal to those people as well while not alienating the transhumanist audience.
It's funny that you say most of your readership is in California, because within the transhumanist circles, certainly, which have the very California-based idea, has been a very California-based ideology and a very libertarian ideology, mm-hmm. very American-centric ideology. Better Humans has published me and other people who have a much more progressive, liberal, sometimes critical view of some of these trends. I mean, you just published an editorial yourself that called for criticism of the space program, mm-hmm. the Bush's Moon Mars space program, which most of the American-based transhumanist libertopian types were, you know, wetting themselves over because mm-hmm. they thought it was going to be great, except for the ones who thought that only private industry should do it.
Right.
But it's always seemed to me that Better Humans has its distinctive Canadian flavor to it, and it, you know, Handmaid's Tale is like one of the greatest science fiction novels of all time, written by Margaret Atwood, mm-hmm. a Canadian. And it seems like we're going in that direction. I mean, I see Better Humans as kind of a bastion of reasonable-mindedness beaming down into this far-right, religious-minded, you know, theocracy that we're building down here.
It's interesting, but I'd say that also that's sort of from our position. I mean, I'd like to think that we sort of take a balanced viewpoint, because, of course, everything I see, you know, and since I help to guide the direction, editorial direction, I see it all as this is all reasonable. It all makes sense to me, right? I mean, I look at that and it's all common sense. I mean, my next column is going to be on performance-enhancing drugs because Bush has now also come out in a State of the Union address against performance-enhancing drugs. And And it, of course, everybody also, most people will just accept that and say, like, great, good for him, he's cracking down. But, you know, we can't even really define, there's no clear line between what's a performance-enhancing drug and what's not. And all the, most, you know, ethicists and or philosophers and people who have I heard talk about it have said that, you know, no, the best thing you can do is try to make more quality in sports through performance-enhancing drugs and through, you know, giving people the ability to genetically balance themselves so that sports is more equal. I see ideas like that as being reasonable, but I'm sure other people look at better humans and see us as being completely, you know, unreasonable or unrealistic or frightening, you know, whatever the case might be. So I think it's almost hard to really think about this objectively and see whether we really are this, are we really a reasonable alternative, or are we just a little bit more reasonable than some of the other people out there and what they're proposing? And I don't really know the answer to that because I'm also too close to it and too biased to know for sure.
I'm speaking with Simon Smith. He's the editor of Better Humans magazine, which is broadcast from Toronto, although it goes all over the world, and is one of the leading sources of transhumanist news and articles. And I have a biweekly column there called Change Surfing, which are you going to accept my column this week or not?
I'll accept almost anything you send our way.
Okay.
Even if you had a manifesto or anything. Probably take that too.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I'll send you my laundry list or something.
Okay.
Simon wrote over this last summer at the Transvision conference that I organized a paper based on social movement theory, and it looked at the transhumanist movement as a social movement. And in the audience when he presented it was William Sims Bainbridge. The very first social movements paper I ever read was one by William Sims Bainbridge about how to recruit members. He was an analysis of the Mormon Church. And Bill went on to become now the head of artificial intelligence funding for the National Science Foundation and is central to their effort to use new technologies to improve human performance. And he was in the audience when you gave that paper, and he said It was one of the best papers that he'd ever heard using movement theory. So tell us, what were some of your key insights into how the transhumanist movement needs to grow and confront its own challenges?
Interesting. And I'll tell you, I think my one key, I learned a lot writing that paper, and I think a large part of why I wrote that paper was simply to learn, period, was really for my own sort of learning process. And I think the one thing that stands out for me to a large degree, which is why I sometimes question some of my choices and activities, is simply that resources make a huge, huge difference. And that the most successful social movements are out there are the ones with the most resources behind them. And so while it's great to have a number of social movement ideas and ideas about how you actually get the ball rolling even from a grassroots level, you know, if someone were to suddenly offer up a lot of money to put behind a cause, they would get their cause going faster. I mean, I think that the ability of the, and this is, I hope nobody interprets this as an attack on religion at all, but the ability of the churches to raise money is the reason why a lot of ideology gets promoted, not necessarily because more people actually believe these things, but because they are some of the most successful resource gatherers on the planet. And because of that, they can do heavy lobbying, and they can organize massive movements. So, in a way, I sometimes question whether I would be better off just trying to make as much money as I possibly can to put behind things that I really support, as opposed to going about some of the activities that I have chosen to go about, which are a little bit more on a grassroots level. But then, of course, you worry about, you know, betraying yourself. And I think that was one of the key insights that I picked up, is that so many of the things that are required to create a successful social movement, including having professional organizers and people who are actually able to coordinate activities amongst disparate groups, take money. And at the end of the day, if your organization isn't able to be a successful money raiser, chances are it's not going to be a successful organization at getting its message across.
That's, I think, one of the ironies of for the political spectrum is that on the libertarian right, you have all these greedy, selfish people, as far as I'm concerned, who don't want to give any of their, they see it as a, they want to know what they're getting for it. Mm-hmm. And they don't feel that impulse. But on the other hand, there are a lot of wealthy individuals in that category. And so if you find the one big sugar daddy who's a good libertarian, the Coors, the founder of Coors or whatever, then you can get your movement bankrolled. And on the other end, you have like the DENIACs down here, like Howard Dean,
mm-hmm.
10,000, 20,000 people who don't have a lot of money, but who want to share it to get rid of Bush. And so you can mobilize, hopefully you can mobilize 10, 20,000 of them and get them all to give $25.
Mm-hmm.
So the two very different models of how to do this. I mean, it's a hell of a lot easier just to find that sugar daddy. I keep looking for my sugar daddy. Haven't found him yet. What's the future for Better Humans? You want to go, you said that you want to become more of an editorial company, but what about, audio, video?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I would classify that all as editorial. I mean, the big picture view, I would say, is at this point, there are a number of things. I mean, of course, I'm very critical of my own work and what we're doing, so we're constantly being self-critical, and we know there are a lot of things wrong with what we're doing, and it's just a matter of do we have the resources and where should we focus them. At this point, I think we definitely like to start doing a lot more in-depth of investigative reporting. That's the type of stuff, though, unfortunately, which is very, very expensive to do. And so we're trying to figure out how do we get the resources to do that sort of investigative reporting. And so we are going to hopefully start syndicating our news and start looking for people who are interested in publishing and licensing our news from us to publish that. And also start to do custom editorial and custom research for a number of organizations. Ideally, we want betterhumans.com to become a real portal for news, features, and resources related to issues obviously of interest to transhumanists, but increasingly issues of interest to everybody around the world, better health and longevity, and what does it mean, and what are the impacts, and what can we do to make a world that we want to live in, and what are the issues. So we want to make it a portal where that information is available. And we also want to, at some point, start looking at the possibility of uniting the people who are producing the products, as well as the thinkers who are thinking about the use of those products, bring them together, even not just on the portal, on the website at betterhumans.com, but also even in future, hopefully, at very large conferences, where we can bring together a lot of the thinkers, let's say, who are talking about issues related to genetic testing and advances in genetic testing, and at the same time even have the opportunity for vendors to come and, display their wares. And now some people might say there's a bit of a conflict there, but our role would not be to take a stand, but merely to provide the forum for people to come together. Because I think a large part of what we're trying to do is let people know that there are choices, and that hopefully we'll just be the place where people can come to make their own choices and think about the issues a little more critically. Because I think definitely there, and I constantly encounter this specifically, I can think, with the genetically modified food debate. I mean, most people who you talk to have already made up their minds that it's either a good thing or a bad thing. And I understand that there's so much information, and one of the reactions that humans have to information overload is the need to make, to strictly categorize, because it's hard to think about every little thing, issue by issue, in so much detail. We just don't have the mental energy. But at the same time, I think that, there's the possibility that a lot of people are going to make the wrong decision, or the governments are going to make the wrong decision. And I just hope that we can provide people with the information and opinions, and ultimately even connect them with the producers, so that they can make choices.
You mentioned that you're trying to hold some conferences. You're going to be hosting or co-hosting the TransVision Conference with the Toronto Transhumanist Association next summer, August 5, 6, 7, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And what can you tell us some the plans for that? It's the focus is on arts and culture, as I understand.
Yeah, this is actually the World Transhumanist Association conference. Better Humans is a media sponsor, but is not directly an organizer, although I'm hoping that maybe we'll be able to pull together the resources to offer a nice dinner or something. But first of all, this is going to be the greatest conference that has ever existed in the universe. That's the first thing that people should know. But no, but seriously, Toronto is actually, I would consider it one of the most transhumanist cities on Earth. And partly, I think it's probably the most multicultural city on Earth and almost definitely the most multicultural city in North America. And I think that means that has contributed to a huge diversity of ideas and open-mindedness in the city. And we also have, there are three large universities in Toronto as well, which also means that it's, you know, you have a lot of the researchers here, and you also have a pretty educated population. And we have people like Steve Mann at the University of Toronto, and so we have some nanotechnology researchers at the U of T as well. So I think it's a great city in which to hold a conference like this because, you know, it's well-suited. We also definitely a very cultural, vibrantly cultural city. For the conference, we are hoping to... One of the great things about Transvision 2003, everybody who was there agreed that it was such a diverse group of people who attended, and there were no barriers between disciplines and even between, even just between the academic attendees and the non-academic attendees. I mean, we ate pizza in a dingy diner one night, and it was a couple of us from Better Humans and a graduate student researcher and Stuart Hameroff, you know, sitting around a table eating pizza and talking about quantum consciousness. And so we want to really, you know, get huge participation from outside the academic community and outside of even the transhumanist community, and start showing people that there's a lot of substance, there's a lot of energy. I think is the real idea is to have a conference with a lot of energy, a really dynamic conference where people can learn a lot about the science and technology and the issues, and also be inspired by the people and the art and the activities, and just really create an environment